affairs will come to order. Committee, for your information, we have a relatively light workload today. We are going to be upping that in that we're going to be hitting the road on the redistricting hearing soon. You'll find that we're going to be much busier Mondays and Wednesdays now, so just be prepared for a whole session. Starting for sure next Monday, but we ought to be fairly busy Wednesday as well. So that's coming for your information. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 626 and Senator Courtney, please. Welcome, Senator Courtney.
Thank you, great Chair Wilson. I'm here to support, I'm Peter Courtney, and I'm a state senator from District 17, which includes Kaiser and parts of Salem. And I'm here in support of Senate Bill 626, and I testified for the bill before the respective Senate committee, as well as carried the bill on the floor. What we have here is a bingo operation by the Salem Boys and Girls Club, which was in West Salem, and it accounts for a significant portion of its income. They then met with the Department of Justice about moving their bingo operations out to a place called Kmart. You don't need to worry about that. It was an abandoned Kmart out in Portland Road North. And they said, okay, it's fine, you can do that. Well, they either leased the property and started to do it, and they were ready to go, and all of a sudden they were found to say, no, you can't do it because it violates state law, because the state law allowed you to have bingo under, and I don't have the exact language here, I don't want to... a material change of circumstances, you're allowed to do bingo unless you had a material change of circumstances. Well, guess what the material change of circumstances was? Salem is one of those cities, get this, committee members, since I'm on another committee called Redistricting, that has part of it in Polk County and part of it in Marin County, even though it's all the city limits. And even though the bingo operation in West Salem was moving to North Salem and staying within the city limits, you can't do that. You can do it if you stay within the same county in terms of it would not be not to make noise like a lawyer, geez, I wish I was young again, a material change of circumstances. So what we're saying is this bill was designed to say that you could move your operation as long as it stayed within the city limits and still operate it, and it would not be considered a material change of circumstances if you went from one county to another, provided you stayed within the state, same city. You need to know there's two other clubs that are affected or would be affected. They're in the situation it could happen. Is it ARC? That involves senior citizens like me down in Eugene. And there's something in Klamath Falls. What's the Klamath Falls one?
Klamath Falls Senior Center.
There's a Klamath Falls Senior Center, and it's ARC in Eugene or the other clubs that could conceivably be affected by that. So all this bill does is allow the Boys and Girls Club to continue their operation or have their operation within the city limits, but going from one side of the river to the other, which does mean moving from Polk to Marion County. That's what it does. Mr. Chair, thank you very much, but that's and I support the bill. This club, by the way, I don't like to say this because of the chair. I must tell you something, Chair. You got to say this.
Senator Courtney, careful.
Well, I know. So let me just put it this way, because you need to know this. Well, I think I got a signal. I think I got Girl Scout cookies. I want to say this. Oh, my whole every part of my body wants to say this, but I think I got a signal from the chair because I think he knows what I'm going to say. So I won't say it because he's extremely close and emotional about his Boys and Girls Club. So I will not say what I want to say unless you want me to say it, Chair, for the sake of your committee, which is dying to hear what I have to say.
To keep you from exploding behind the microphone, yes, go ahead.
There are 2,700 Boys and Girls Club in this great nation of ours. Just last week, Representative Dandol, you know what I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. Do you want to say it, Representative Dandol, since you're on this committee?
Please, you go ahead.
It was chosen. Not number 10. Not number 9.
7?
Not 7.
Should have been.
Not 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. It was chosen. The number 1 in the entire nation. So that is this club. Now, I mean, no disrespect, Chair.
Close the public hearing. We'll go into a work session on Senate Bill 626. And while we have this work session open, Marla Ray, would you like to just come up for a moment to aggrandize this if possible?
Chair Wilson, members of the committee, my name is Marla Ray. I'm a volunteer board member with the Salem Boys and Girls Club. I'm simply here to respond to any questions if you have any. This bill is a very simple bill. The Department of Justice representatives are here, and I believe that they will express no opposition to what we're attempting to do. This would restore our exemptions that were grandfathered in back in 1987 for our club. It means about $150,000 a year. That allows us to operate one of our branch operations. So unless you have questions, I have nothing further to add.
Do we have any questions? Representative Doyle.
Just to clarify, Marla, was it number one in the nation or number one in the world?
That would be number one in the world, sir. He asked a question. I couldn't not answer that.
I realize that. Do we have any further questions? Thank you very much. Okay, we are in work session. I'd be happy to take a motion.
Mr. Chair?
Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 626 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative March moves Senate Bill 626 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do we have any discussion? Jennifer, you call the roll, please.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Gardner?
He's excused.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative March?
Aye.
Representative Starr?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Excused.
Representative Walker?
Excused.
Representative Wilson?
Aye. And motion carries. And Representative Doyle, I guess you're a natural for that. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 626. I'd like to mention to those gathered here today that Representative Devlin has asked that we move his bill, House Bill 2706, to Wednesday, and that we will do. We'll now open work session on House Bill 2575. After we heard this bill last time, we assigned Representative Starr and Devlin to take a look at this bill, and they came back with some amendments, and that would be the Dash 1 amendments. I don't intend to move this bill today, but I do want to talk about the amendments here for a moment, if we might. Representative Starr and Devlin, if you would like to talk a bit about the Dash 1s and what section of the bill they affect, and a little bit about those, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would actually have to read them in great detail to say exactly what they impact in terms of section by section. But generally, let me say a couple of things that they do. One is that they would add one additional report beyond what is already in law for initiative committees. Secondarily, for candidates, what we discussed was, remember, the bill wanted to move the second pre-election back a week. We think that that is actually beneficial. But along those lines then came up issues about reporting contributions and reporting expenditures. And we decided that rather than have a daily reporting, which we thought would be extremely cumbersome, particularly during those closing days of a campaign, that we would have two reporting periods, one which would be cover a period of approximately about 10 days, and one would, I believe, cover a period of about a week, so that those reports would be like the normal supplementals that we have, where what it basically would be simply is currently all we list now is contributions, but this would list contributions and expenditures. And in the case of contributions, after a great deal of discussion and my recollection of the agony that I went through in the 97 and 99 session, when all I wanted to do was to change the amount from $50 to $100, where you'd have to report the occupation, and I think I was accused of denying the public vital information, that even though $500 is not that much money in terms of campaigns now, that we would keep the contribution level at $500, because if we did not keep it at $500, we know that there would be people coming out of the woodwork saying what the travesty was of raising it. We did set the amount of expenditures at $1,000. Now, that will cover almost all major expenditures that a campaign makes. Obviously, you cannot make a buy of either radio cable or, obviously, television, broadcast television time for less than $1,000. almost all direct mail activity that a candidate would have would probably exceed $1,000. Those two reports, would be filed, like I say, between that final period of time since the second pre-election is filed. I think a lot of this goes back to us getting to the point where significant campaigns, and I think that's previously been defined, all campaigns are significant. I hope I didn't. Campaigns where expenditures exceed $50,000, we are hoping that they will go to electronic reporting, and we've had some assurances, particularly in Representative Starr's and my meeting, that the Secretary of State will come forward with some software packages by private vendors that will actually work. And so that if we get the combination of these things, the pre-election moved back, people will actually have more information available to them about who is supporting or not supporting candidates for public office, and we think that's beneficial. I may have left something out, and Representative Stark can obviously fill in, but those were the major areas we discussed. Now, we did discuss additional reporting beyond the one additional report that we've asked for in the initiative process. We looked at that in two different ways. Is once an initiative actually becomes certified for the ballot, met the signature requirement, a ballot measure committee is going to be formed, and obviously there will be the normal reporting for that. Also, Representative Starr and I wanted a bill that would make it through the entire process, and we thought that, while it was good to add one additional reporting, the more additional reporting requirements that we added to the bill beyond that, the more the opposition might come to the bill and the more that might endanger the bill getting through the entire process. Although I think that there would be some potential benefits to considering some expansion of those reporting requirements, and I think the committee is going to have that discussion. I think there are two people here that want to have that discussion. Representative Starr and I worked to get to agreement, and obviously we are not the committee as a whole. We don't speak for the committee. We just tried to come up with some options that we thought would be most supportable by the committee as a whole, the House as a whole, and obviously the other chamber also.
Sure. Thank you for your diligent work on that. Representative Starr, anything to add to that?
I think Representative Evan covered most of that. I don't believe that the committee has a copy of the -1 amendment. I know I don't have one in my file.
I do have a copy.
I do. Exactly. And I'm looking, Representative March or Tim Girard, to have a copy of it.
All right. Thank you. All right, very good. Thank you. And again, I appreciate your support on that. Now at the witness table, we have Representative Doyle and Representative Nolan with us today. And you have some amendments that you would like to talk about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dan Doyle, State Representative from House District 30. And with me is Representative Nolan. We had had some discussions about the our own, as we were trying to put a bill together looking at the statewide initiative process and wanting to be sure that there was a mechanism in place for what amounted to reporting those contributions and expenditures a little bit more often than what was already in place. And we had come up with another bill with Representative Max Williams also signing as chief sponsor, that actually started out as a monthly reporting with some other issues as well. And then when we saw that HB 2575 was proceeding on, we saw this as pretty much covering the same issue when we looked at putting the reporting of the contributions and expenditures, I guess, more often than what we currently see. And at this point, the recommendation, at least that we saw made the most sense, was to go to a quarterly reporting system so that those who are involved in the initiative process, that as they receive contributions or as they make expenditures for particular initiatives, that they are then required to put through a C&E report on a quarterly basis, which at that point it just makes the information known right up front so that there is no question, at least within a three-month period of time, that the individuals who are supporting the various measures and even at the point that they're collecting signatures, individuals would have a better opportunity to know the individuals that are making the contributions on on those various initiatives. And at this point, we had, since this amendment has just come forward, we're certainly interested in discussing this further with the committee and with the Secretary of State's office to make sure that this is something that's going to be workable. Now, I'll turn it over to Representative Nolan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Mary Nolan, the representative from House District 11 in Southwest Portland. Representative Doyle has given you a nice summary of what brings us to this opportunity, actually in an attempt to take advantage of some momentum you've already built up and not burden your committee agenda with additional bills. If we can accomplish most of this objective, then the other bill doesn't need to proceed. We all know that Oregonians feel very strongly that they, as citizens, own their government. We, as citizen legislators, are one example of the way that manifests itself here in Oregon. Our system of government is built on the premise that real folks make the best decisions for real folks to have to live under. We all, after the session and often sometimes during the session, have to go home to our districts and earn livings under the same rules that we impose on our neighbors and the rest of our community. Another way that citizens exert their ownership of this process is exemplified here by the public hearings that we hold. The closed circuit television system that we have that makes it makes all of our processes available to the public. We've put that on the web now. We publish notices to people. We have gone consistently over the years in a deliberate trend toward more and more access for citizens to their government, to the process under which their laws are formulated, debated, and ultimately implemented. Representative Doyle and I have worked together to bring you an amendment to this bill that addresses an extension of the legislative process, the citizen petition process, which, as we all know, is another aspect of citizens owning their government here in Oregon that people cling to very steadfastly. And I would submit to you that it is, in fact, an extension of the legislative process. Sometimes we miss an issue. Sometimes we don't get it right. And the right of petition is the way that the citizens hold on to the opportunity to keep us on track, if you will. The reason we have thought that providing public access and public scrutiny of the people behind initiative petitions is that it is in those early stages of an initiative petition that the policy, the legislative policy that might end up being enacted, is actually formulated. And that is just as important for the public to have access to that information and the people behind it as it is for them to have access to these public hearings, to the floor debates we have, to the development of legislation as we do it in the legislative session. And I bring that parallel to you because I think it's exactly apt. Providing access for people early on, as initiative petitions and referendum petitions are being developed, is the only way for people to really have insight into the early formulative stages of that legislative process. If we wait until the pre-election primary reporting period, which, first of all, I will compliment Representative Devlin and Representative Starr, is an improvement from where we are now. But if we wait that long, then a year and a half or more of the development process will have passed without any scrutiny at all. We've tried very hard to minimize the burden, both for the chief sponsors and certainly for the Secretary of State, by crafting this schedule of reporting dates to parallel existing dates. And wherever possible, we've used existing dates as the landmark so that we're not creating an additional report. There are, however, three additional reporting dates in the amendment that Representative Doyle references. But what they do is they really open a window to this process early on so that people can understand what might be before them. I would love to take questions from you, but I would really encourage the committee to look favorably on an earlier and easy process for people to have information about bills that they might have to be voting on at the ballot. Thank you for your attention.
Certainly. Thank you. Do we have any questions? Representative Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you both for your testimony and your bringing this amendment forward. I want to go on record as not being opposed to public access to as much information as possible. Representative Nolan, you mentioned in your testimony putting legislators and the public on equal access. As far as the laws that we pass, we have to live according to those.
Mm-hmm.
Once we get out of this building and back to our regular lives. My sense, though, these amendments put us in unequal footing, legislators as candidates and candidates for state office, on unequal footing to those initiative petitions out there, and that we would require them to have more recording requirements than they would as us legislators who are also out there raising money and finding the backers in the community and the lobby and so on to fund our campaigns. Do you see an inconsistency there between putting initiative petitions at a higher level or a higher standard than candidates?
Mr. Chair, Representative Starr, I don't see an inconsistency at all, because the analogy I think is apt here is that the legislative process, as we deliberate laws that might be passed that impose restrictions or create opportunities for Oregonians, are subject to enormous, and I would submit rightly so, enormous scrutiny from the public. I think that's the direction we should be going. What we're suggesting here, or at least what I'm suggesting, is that the deliberative process, the development process for other laws that would come to the people through petition, but nonetheless impose restrictions or create opportunities in their lives, should be subject to the same kind of exposure and scrutiny. And that's the analogy that I think is most apt. So, in fact, I think there's no inconsistency, but without a similar approach, there would be an inconsistency.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would disagree in that a candidate who's not elected for office as of the time that they file and start raising money has the ability to influence legislation, affect people's lives through that process, ultimately, if they ultimately get elected. Similarly, as one of these petitions ultimately gets on the ballot, they're kind of dual tracks with the potential of impacting the public in a significant way. I would be real concerned that we put initiative petitions and their backers and their folks that are out there working from those at a different level or a higher standard than and candidates themselves. So that's a major concern that I would have. I also, working with Representative Devlin, concerned that we don't amend this bill to death, that we get a bill that we can ultimately work through this process and get a governor's signature. So that would be, for the record, Mr. Chair, another concern that I would have. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Representative Starr. Any further discussion? All right. Thank you very much. We'll close our work session on House Bill 2575. All right, committee, I just want to state again that we are going to get considerably busier in our subsequent meetings as we begin to contemplate hitting the road and doing the redistricting hearings that will compress what we're doing into a couple of hearing days per week here on a very consistent basis. So just be prepared for full sessions from this point forward. And thank you. Appreciate your attendance today. Committee is adjourned.